On the Power Play, our flagship hockey podcast. I'm your host, Ben Kerr, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Colton Prale. Colton, how are you doing tonight?
Apparently better than you. You know, I can get my name right. Jeez, Ben. I'm doing well.
It's been a rough Monday.
Trust me, I know exactly where you're coming from.
The bomb cyclone is affecting everyone.
it's been crazy out here, but the good news is, and I mean maybe not for you, but at least for me in Sensland, Drake Batherson looks like incredible.
Well, I mean, he did have a good tournament. He had a great tournament. We're talking about the World Juniors, obviously, and two big goals in the semifinal, or a hat trick in the semifinal, two big goals in the quarterfinal. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And I think seven goals overall in the tournament.
Looking like a young Joe Pavelski.
A very good tournament. There's another player on the Sens, Chris DiDomenico, who also had a fantastic World Junior. So
why you gotta be like that?
I just like to caution people who go crazy scouting this one tournament that it's a 2-week tournament, and it's not a guarantee of NHL success. AKA
Travis Lazar is fresh in my mind.
Justin Poggi.
Yeah, that's another one.
but then there are players who look fantastic in the World Juniors and go on to big things in the NHL. You know, Corey Perry had a real breakout performance at this tournament after being a 13th forward at it. You started to see what Shea Weber was capable of in the World Juniors. You started to see you had Peter Forsberg absolutely dominate a tournament, Pavel Bure. Like, we've seen guys take this stage and just really show their stuff too. So you never know. Drake Batherson might be a pretty good one, but we will have to see. He's been a good player in the QMJHL as well, which is a positive. And that's what you want, is a big sample size of doing well in junior.
Mm-hmm. Who impressed you the most?
Over the course of the tournament, I think you have to go. I'm going to be doing, actually, tomorrow I'm going to write up an article on draft prospects who impressed me, and then after that, some already drafted players who've impressed me. But I think you have to look at Rasmus Dahlin and Philip Zadina for what they did in this tournament as far as draft prospects goes. Dahlin basically solidified his spot at number one. I think most people had him ahead of Svechnikov coming into the tournament, but he's really left no doubt at this point that he is the number one pick in this draft. And I think that his performance, this is a 19-year-old's tournament, and he looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think Philip Zadina scored seven goals. He looked really good for the Czechs. He has maybe put some pressure on the number three, number two spots in the draft with his performance in this tournament. And he's been doing it all year long for Halifax.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I was reading Craig Button's draft rankings after the tournament, and he didn't have Zadina moving at all, but he'd bumped Brady Tkachuk up to number three because of his performance, which I wasn't sold on. You know, Tkachuk is definitely going to be a good player, don't get me wrong, but I'm just really cautious about players like that who are so big, so young.
Tkachuk had a very good tournament, but I felt that the driving force on the U.S. team was Casey Mittelstadt.
Oh, yeah, by far.
And I think I didn't really look at the Directorate Awards. He won MVP of the tournament, did he not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised that only Cale Makar made the tournament All-Star teams from Canada. I would have gone a little bit more than that. I would have. I liked the performance of Carter Hart over Philip Gustafsson. And there was a couple other, you know, maybe a forward from Canada could have gotten into the All-Star team, someone like a Drake Batherson. But overall, I thought Mittelstadt drove the play for the U.S. team. And it seemed like whoever was on Mittelstadt's line was getting it done. I didn't think Brady Tkachuk was getting an awful lot done when he wasn't with Mittelstadt. And then when he was, he seemed to take off.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the display of a truly good player. And I think if this tournament showed anything for the Americans or for Sabres fans, it's that Casey Mittelstadt's the real deal. And he's going to be an excellent player for them in the future.
Yeah, I do like Brady Tkachuk, though. And one thing I really like about Brady Tkachuk, and it's outside this tournament, is that he's leading his team, and not by a little bit, but by a lot in shots at down there in Boston. And that's an important stat. We all know possession game-wise, generating shots, generating opportunities. He seems to generate a lot of scoring chances, a lot of opportunities when he's on the ice, whether it be at the college level or at this tournament. And doing that at the college level is extremely impressive for a freshman who's a late birthday and one of the younger players in the NCAA.
There is a lot of value in being able to generate and create your own opportunities. And I think that's generally a pretty strong predictor of future success.
Yeah, so I would move Brady Tkachuk up in my rankings. I believe I had him 7 last time. He's not going to be 7 again. I don't know where he's definitely moved ahead of Quinn Hughes. That's one for sure. Quinn Hughes didn't play a lot in this tournament. He looked good when he played, but he didn't get a lot of ice time. And I'm not so much hurting him as saying, you know, Tkachuk was just better in this tournament. Mm-hmm. As I said, it's hard for an underage player, especially a defenseman, to really put their stamp on a 19-year-old tournament. But I think that Brady Tkachuk did a better job of that than Hughes. I'm not going to move Hughes down too far. He's still going to be in my top 8 or so. He might be 7th after this tournament. I don't put out a ranking till the end of the month. But that's what you could probably expect. I don't know what to do with Tkachuk and Wahlstrom. I think I'm going to have Wahlstrom a little bit higher. I really have liked his game at the National Team Development Program. And I really... He's the top center in this draft for me. And I can't go a lot lower than 5 on the before seeing a center come off the board.
That's fair. Where do you have a Shvetnikov moving at all?
I don't think I'm going to move him off 2, but there is certainly some pressure on him at 2 now. It's not as clear cut where it was 1, 2, and then everyone else. My big debate, and I will need to look at this over the next week or two, will be Zadina and Bockfist at 3.
Yeah, Bockfist moved up to 2 in Button's rankings. Zadina slotted in at 5, and Shvetnikov was at 4.
Okay, so he's got Brady Tkachuk, you said at 3?
Yeah.
Who's he have at 2?
Bockfist.
Bockfist at 2. Okay. Mm-hmm. Craig Button, I really like Craig Button's rankings, and one of the reasons I really like it is because you can go to other ranking sites and you see a cluster, and it just everyone seems to pick off everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it might be a spot or two difference or something like that. That's not the way real NHL teams are ranking these guys. If you grab two random teams, you might find a guy at 4 on one list and at 18 on the other list.
Mm-hmm.
NHL teams do. I mean, they have a lot more variability, and Button will do that. Button will, that's how we get a guy like a Carl Alsner, who most people had on those lists in the teens going fourth overall. That's how we get a Blake Wheeler, who most people had as a late first round pick going fifth overall. That's, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Obviously, Alsner maybe went a little bit too high. Blake Wheeler has obviously justified his draft selection. But you see picks like that where a guy rises really quickly. It's because one team has fallen in love with him and doesn't want to trade down and risk losing him. And that's where you see another one that was picked way higher than most people had him ranked, Mark Scheifele.
Yep.
And that looks like a fantastic pick right now. That, you know, maybe he should have been first overall in that draft.
I feel strongly about that.
You know, whose draft was that?
It was
I remember him going seventh.
Churier in that draft?
I can't remember that was Zibanejad was in that one.
Yeah, Couturier was in that one too.
Yeah, so that would have been the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins draft.
Yeah, no, I think it's between Scheifele and Couturier for who should have gone first.
I think it's Scheifele. I don't think that there's much debate. I like Couturier a lot. He's broken out this season, but it's
Scheifele.
Yeah, and that's Dougie Hamilton probably could have gone a bit higher than where he slipped to nine.
Yeah, there was Landeskog in that one too, which is other question. So. Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from.
I'm a center. I've said this in my draft rankings before. If I've got two guys really close, I take the center every time, regardless of the other player's position. I take centers over wingers. I take centers over defensemen.
They're just more valuable.
Not just that they're just more valuable, but it's a supply and demand thing.
Mm-hmm.
You do not find a lot of centers late in the first round, in the second round, in the third round, who become legit franchise centers. Mm-hmm. You just don't. And if you look around the league, there are very few. If you look around the league, you find Norris Trophy winners at 15 overall in Erik Karlsson, in the late 20s in Brent Burns, in the second round in PK Subban and Duncan Keith, and, you know, guys who are finalists for the Norris in Shea Weber in late in the second round. You find Nick Lidstrom was a third round pick. You find so many Norris winners who are picked later in the draft. There's a ton of them. You mm-hmm. want to look for an Art Ross winner? Well, your latest pick ever is Jamie Benn. You have an undrafted player in Martin St. Louis, and the rest are all up at the top of the draft. You got to go back to Brian Trottier to find somebody in the 20s.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a great stat.
So, and Brian Trottier for a long time was the lowest drafted player ever to win the Art Ross Trophy. Until Jamie Benn won it, he was the lowest drafted player to win the Art Ross Trophy.
That's crazy.
So, you don't find guys who are that elite level of forward mm-hmm. later in the draft. If you identify a high-end forward, take the forward, because you might get lucky and find your defenseman later. There's a chance that you can find a defenseman later. There's almost no chance of finding an elite talent at forward later.
All right, let's circle back to the World Juniors then. And we both had USA as the best team going into the tournament. Now that you've seen how it played out, how do you feel about that?
I think Sweden may have been the best team. I know Canada won it. Sweden plays Canada seven times. I don't know that Canada wins a seven-game series there.
I'm on board with that.
But Canada played well, and the U.S. I think disappointed in a few ways. I don't think they quite had the offense that they thought they had. although Casey Mittelstadt was fantastic, they just seemed to lack, so, and Kiefer Bellows was fantastic. They seemed to lack some secondary scoring on that team.
I think that was the biggest thing for me, was just there was a lot less depth than I expected.
Yeah, and some of their players just didn't come up with as big a tournament as I think that they would have hoped for.
Are you looking at Joseph Wall?
Their goaltending, Joseph Wall had an... It's hard to blame him because, you know what? Even if you give up 3 goals to Slovakia...
You should be scoring more than 3 against Slovakia.
You should put up 8.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's very fair.
And so I'm not going to blame that loss completely on Joseph Wall. That's one game they lost.
He didn't look great against the Swedes either, though.
I thought the Swedes outplayed the Americans, though, too.
Oh, for sure. I just don't think Wall looked very good.
No. There was a weak goal. But again, you don't score in that game until it's 4-0.
Yeah. You're in a bad spot to begin with.
Yeah, you don't score a goal until very late in the third period. You're putting a lot of pressure on your goaltender. So, I mean, Wall didn't have a great tournament, but again, I'll say that there are a lot of players who don't have great tournaments and still become really solid players. And so the Leafs fans out there shouldn't be too worried about Joseph Wall at this point.
Oh, no, it's way more fun when Leaf fans are worried. Panic Nation. Panic Blue Nation.
Well, I mean, I think that Joseph Wall is terrible. I think that they should package him with Timothy Liljegren and go out and get Erik Gudbranson, just like Don Cherry said.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about that? Is that the worst trade Don Cherry has suggested in recent memory?
The Mitch Marner for
yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be.
I am struggling to think of a time where he's been like crazier. Like even the Chris Russell defense doesn't even come close to this.
No, this
was awful.
I laughed.
This is his Ice Dogs in a nutshell. This is why that team barely had any wins. That kind of thinking.
Yeah, no, it's madness. It's madness. And then he went and doubled down on it today on Vancouver radio about how great Gudbranson would be in Toronto. And these people who are watching Gudbranson every night are just like, yeah, please. You know?
If you offered Borgman for Gudbranson 1-for-1,
I think the Canucks would win the deal.
I think they would too. Like, it's just, he's not a good defender.
No, I wouldn't give a 3rd-round pick for him straight up.
No. He is a slightly better version of Greiba.
Yeah. From a Leaf fan perspective, he is a slightly better version of Roman Polak. He's a younger Roman Polak.
That's exactly what I think Roman Polak might have been better when he was younger.
Well, yes, but he's a younger version
current Roman Polak.
Yeah, basically the same guy as current Roman Polak in a 25-year-old body.
It's just not a good look, and I don't know what Don was thinking. It's just...
I don't know.
You want to go back to international hockey?
Yeah. US Olympic? US Olympic team's interesting. A couple of names that people are very NHL fans are very familiar with.
Bobby Butler.
Yeah, James Wisniewski, Brian Gionta captaining the team.
Yeah, that's the obvious one. Mark Arcabello, who's played for every NHL team.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's so disappointing to have these guys, to see this team and to see how bad it actually is now on paper. I mean, Brian Gionta was pretty much washed up as a Buffalo Sabre last year. There's a reason he's on this team and wasn't offered an NHL contract when he wants to continue his career.
And that's washed up as a Buffalo Sabre. Look at their bottom six when you get a chance. Yeah, if you're listening to this, pull up Left Wing Lock or Daily Faceoff, whatever you use, and check out their bottom six. Brian Gionta couldn't crack that. And he's captaining a U.S. Olympic team. The only relief here is Troy Terry.
Yeah.
That's the only player I'm excited to watch in this entire roster. And maybe Bobby Sanguinetti, but that's for fun.
I once wanted the Habs to draft Bobby Sanguinetti.
I suddenly value your draft rankings less.
Of course.
I guess Jordan Greenway will be cool too. He's the Is he the first African American member on a U.S. Olympic team?
He might be.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think those stories came out when he cracked the World Juniors.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. I mean, in defense of my Bobby Sanguinetti love, it was 11 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
The Habs' actual pick was David Fisher.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't... fair.
It could have been a little bit... I think Sanguinetti had a better NHL career than David Fisher.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. Did you see the video of Bobby Butler's dad finding out he made the Olympic team?
No.
Oh, it's so cool. It's at the Admiral practice, and I guess Butler's dad was there. I don't know if he's involved with the team somehow, but Bobby comes over and tells him and lets him know. And the dad gives him like this massive hug and like starts like shaking him and like hitting him on the back and on the helmet. He just sees like so proud. And then he pauses and looks at him and is like, "For real?" And Bobby's like, "Yeah." And then he goes back to being like this most excited dad. It was just such a raw emotional moment. It's so cool to watch. I'm pretty sure the Admirals tweeted it out. It's definitely worth watching.
I'll definitely have to watch that.
Who do you got for Canada? Who's the Brian Gionta that's going to come on the Canadian roster and captain it?
I'm
guessing Corey Conacher.
No, I think it's going to be a pretty big name.
You think so?
I think it's going to be Jerome Iginla.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Jaromír Jágr goes to the Czech team?
I think he wants to. I think he wants out of that Calgary deal. That's the rumor, right?
Well, that's just it. He wants an out.
And I can see him really looking for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I was him, I'd rather play in the Olympics than on Calgary. I mean, he's barely playing on Calgary.
Yeah, and he's been injured a lot.
And go out representing the nation versus the Flames that you have no allegiances to.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's just, I mean, that's a disappointing year in Calgary. There's a disappointing year in a few Canadian cities, and we'll get to two of them later on in the podcast. But Calgary's got to be considered a disappointment this year.
I still have faith that they can rebound a bit. They're not that far out of a wild card spot, if I remember correctly.
No, they're not. And their analytics are very, very strong for a team.
And the 3M line wasn't doing much at all for most of the season, and that was their best line last year.
Yeah, so
I can see it happening. That's like a second wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit for them is they are in the Pacific, which has been brutal, just brutal.
Yeah, the Pacific Division. I mean, I still don't. The Vegas thing is so Vegas blue. I don't even know where to start with it.
I don't like. They're definitely a good team, but they get to beat up on a really bad division, and that's where a lot of their wins have come from. Is Arizona and Anaheim when Anaheim was terrible, and I'm not saying that Vegas is a bad team, but I don't think they're the second best team in the league.
There's something stupid like 18-2-1 at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's Vegas.
Exactly what they
flew written all over it. First time for most of these teams through Vegas, and parting it up the night before the game, and they're in no shape to play by the time they get to T-Mobile Arena the next day.
Yeah, yeah. And even if they're not doing that anymore, I think Vegas has reached a point where just like mentally, they believe they can't be beaten at home. You know, I mean, there is a certain aspect to it. I don't think it explains all of it, but I think there is a certain mentality that when you've only lost, you know, twice in regulation at home, there's a certain undefeatable aspect.
Two of the three teams that beat them in Vegas were playing on the second half of a back-to-back. Did not spend the previous night, or did not get into Vegas until well after midnight.
I think that's a part of it. I think that's a pretty telling stat right there.
You know, that two of the three teams that were able to avoid the Vegas flu didn't get into Vegas till after midnight. So it was like straight from the airport to your hotel and in bed kind of thing.
If you're not enjoying Vegas, there's no flu.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we used to see this in L.A. a lot when L.A. was the only Southern team. The Kings would have ridiculous, and this is going back to the 70s and 80s, the Kings would have this ridiculous home record and this terrible road record. And it was the LA flu back then, and coaches eventually caught on to what was going on and made sure that, and general managers made sure that they gave their team a day or two off in LA after the game, but not before, and said, You're on curfew the night before. You can have a day off the day after the game. And I think that that's what coaches and GMs are going to ask for schedule makers for Vegas. And I think it also, this generation of players isn't quite as rambunctious as the 70s and 80s guys were, and are more into taking care of their bodies and things like that. So I think that once it becomes a second or third time through Vegas, it's not going to be as big a deal.
I think it loses some of its appeal.
Yeah, I think once guys have done a few trips through Vegas, it won't be as big an issue as it is right now.
You want to move on to a different team that's done quite a few trips through the gambling machine?
Sure.
Thinking the Edmonton Oilers and their lottery luck.
Fair enough.
According to Mika McCurdy, 8% chance at Rasmus Dahlin.
Well, I think...
same as the Sens right now.
Yeah. I think the Oilers are bound to get a defenseman in this draft. I think it would be... And I know I said earlier, I said always take the forward over the defenseman. I think if you're the Edmonton Oilers and you contemplate a forward in this draft, unless somehow you're like picking seventh and the first six picks are defensemen, it would be completely incompetent to take another forward.
I like your thought for the polite way to say that.
Yeah, in this draft... If you I subscribe to the best player available theory, and I say take your forwards before your defensemen, all else being equal. But at some point, some point, you've got to go for a team need and go, I've got Draisaitl and I've got McDavid and I've got Puljujarvi, who's looking pretty good this year, and I've got Kyler Yamamoto and Nugent Hopkins, and their forwards are not the issue. To get a right-handed defenseman would be tremendous for them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't go out and draft a defenseman, then just give it up, Edmonton. Like, you might as well fold the franchise. Like, there's nothing good that could possibly come from this.
You listen to the Peter Chiarelli presser?
A little bit, yeah.
Extremely disappointed with the way the season has went. He knows the fans want change, but it's not happening. He's not firing Todd McClellan, which I think, for the record, is the right call. I don't think McClellan is the issue.
No,
I love the line, though, where he's like, you know, every time I try to fix something, there's new holes that pop up. And it's like, no, you kidding me? Like, yeah, trading Taylor Hall probably creates a gap. I don't know if you thought that one through. Jordan Eberle, now you need a goal scorer? Who could have seen that?
I mean, the Taylor Hall, and I know how many people were like, oh, look, the Taylor Hall deal isn't as bad as we thought it was last year at this time and into the playoffs and stuff. The Taylor Hall deal was always bad. And
it was never a good idea.
No, and we've only shown this year how bad it was. And Taylor Hall is one of the main reasons New Jersey's competing right now. He's one of the few wingers in the league who can drive play the way a center can. Who can
Taylor
control
Hall.
Puck possession. Who can
do
those things from a wing position. It's not a lot of guys who can do that at his level. Maybe a Kucherov.
Off the top of my head, I can think
Tarasenko,
of four
Tarasenko and Ovechkin, like.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark Stone, Brandon Saad.
Pacioretty, when he's been on his game, which he hasn't been this season, did that for Montreal.
But, I mean, this is a short list of elite players.
Yeah.
And you get rid of him for Adam Larson.
Yeah, yeah. It's madness. It's madness. And they're gonna trade Nugent Hopkins.
Oh, you know what's going to happen.
And it's going to be a terrible deal.
CeCe.
Well, they already traded CeCe once, apparently, for Taylor Hall.
Apparently nobody wants him anymore.
People have discovered.
Apparently the rest of the league knows he's terrible, except for Ottawa. But, no, I mean this was just so easy to see with Edmonton.
Although, hold on a second. This is the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
The entire league knew that Chris Russell was terrible. And they signed him for a good deal. I didn't have a problem with last year's 1 year, $1 million or $1.5 million or whatever they gave him to play on the third.
Yeah, that was fine. But the 4x4 or whatever it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Everyone else knows he's terrible, and they gave him like the 4 year, $16 million contract.
I've been noticing the local Edmonton media, even what's his face, Bob Stauffer, has been like, I don't want to say calling out Chiarelli, but they're certainly not holding water for Chiarelli like they have in the past. And when those guys aren't on your side anymore, or are at least distancing themselves from you, like that's a bad sign.
Yeah,
you're on the hot.
Yeah, that's a.
And he should be. He should have been fired by now.
They gave him so much money to come in there and...
No, but like, you can't move Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall and then have scoring issues like this and not shore up your defense. And we will get to that philosophy in a second too, but like, you just can't make that many mistakes and not solve any of the issues.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, no, it's craziness. It's absolute craziness.
I think Cody Franzen's a fit. They need a right shot.
I don't know where Cody Franzen's going. Cody Franzen's going somewhere.
Sure.
By the time this podcast is up, Cody Franzen will have been claimed. And someone's going to take a gig because it's only $1 million and he's not getting through.
He's a defenseman in the right minutes.
Yeah, and I didn't think he's been that bad for Chicago, really.
Cody Franzen is slow.
Yeah.
End of story. You know, he is not a strong skater. He is a very good power play defenseman who will do just fine on your third pairing if you give him someone who can support him. You know, don't pair him with a Jamie Oleksiak. But if you put him beside anybody who's fleet of foot, he'll be fine.
Yeah, no, it really is a... bit of a question mark for me as to what they are doing
in Chicago
with him. Yeah, I don't understand what Chicago's doing here.
Yeah, I mean, their defense is a big issue for them, and I don't think this is the right move.
Yeah,
I think loyalty is playing an issue there as well, though.
Well, yeah. Loyalty or. There's a guy they're loyal to who no one would touch with a 20-foot pole given his contract.
Also that, yeah. Yeah, we are talking about Seabrook here, correct?
Yes, yeah.
That's what I think. Okay.
There's
that's
no fair. One who will touch that Brent Seabrook contract with a 20-foot pole right now. And I don't blame them. I mean, maybe if Edmonton wanted Carl Alsner or something, then
that'd be an interesting move. I don't think that's the solution either.
It's not the solution for Edmonton. It's not the solution for Montreal, but I think it's the kind of move that could see Seabrook moved.
That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, I don't know where else. And Seabrook and Bergevin would have the history together. Which is a nice little segue into Mark Bergevin, who also held a press conference yesterday.
And has a history of making bad trades.
Yes.
So, connections there.
Well.
You have Shea Weber on your team. Continue.
Okay. I'm looking for the plural on the bad trades.
Ryan McDonagh? I know.
No, that's before his time.
I know I'm stretching there. Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe the Drouin. I think the jury's still out.
Defensible. I think Drouin is defensible.
Yeah, and
you needed a real scoring threat, and regardless of whether or not Drouin pans out, I like the move. I like the idea of the move. I think that's the best way to phrase that. I see the rationale behind it, and I can get behind that.
The other thing with Drouin, and I know everyone's brought up these stats that Sergachev is outscoring him and this and that. And
those are my favorite stats.
Okay, I know you love them, but if we dig a little deeper, Drouin has set up a ridiculous number of high danger scoring chances that have not been finished by his wing.
Drouin is a very capable player who, if he was playing with other capable players, would be doing better than he is.
Yes, yes.
There is a reason he's being outscored by a defenseman, and it's because that defenseman's playing on arguably the best team in the league.
Yeah, and Drouin is playing on arguably the worst scoring team in the league.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, the Habs are just not good in the offensive zone.
No, they... Drouin is one of the few players on that team who is able to generate side-to-side movement for the goaltender.
Mm-hmm. And the other player on that team who does that very well is, I don't want to say despised by half the fan base, but he's certainly not in their good books.
Who's that?
Ian Galchenyuk.
I don't know if he's despised by half the fan base. He's despised by the management.
That's true.
I see a lot of fans who are fans of Alex Galchenyuk and do not want him traded and are scared of what Bergevin will bring back for him.
It will never be what he's worth. And I mean, you know that better than anybody, but it will not be what he's worth.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's leading the team in scoring. I think the rumors around him have almost died down. At this point in the season, I don't expect him traded this year. I may be surprised. I may regret that, but I really don't see him being traded before the trade deadline.
I think it would be a catastrophic mistake to get rid of Alex Galchenyuk.
I think the guys that you're looking at going first things first, let's address what Mark Bergevin said yesterday. First thing he said was that he's not mortgaging the future to bring in someone to help this team. He says he'd love to do it. He's not sure there's any one player available in the NHL right now who can turn this around. And given their spot in the standings, he's not willing to mortgage the future.
And I think that's the right move to make.
I agree 100% with what he's saying there. Let's hope he lives by that, but I agree 100% with what he's saying there. His second thing was that he's not ready to give up on the playoffs yet, and I think a lot of people think that's the wrong move, but I also think it's the right move right now, today, and that is for a couple of reasons. Number one, trade deadline's at the end of February. There's no pressure to make your decision today. You've got time to, if you want to become a seller, you've got time to sell off the pieces, and we can talk about those pieces later. The second thing is, Montreal, in their next six games, play the Boston Bruins three times. And if you're looking at the schedule and you're Mark Bergevin and you're saying, is there any way I can get that my team can get back into the playoffs? Is there any hope for my club? It's those three games. It's this six game segment. If they go and get, you know, go 2-0-1 against Boston or 3-0 against Boston, you can put yourself back in the conversation in the division. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be quite all the way back, but you take 6 points off the Bruins, you're right, but you're nipping at their heels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm fine with that. And if what is more likely, I mean, I've watched this team all season. I'm not saying that taking 6 points off the Bruins is likely. I don't think it is. But you lose two games to the Bruins, and then you have Bergevin saying, okay, now we're done. Now it's time to make those trades. But I don't blame him for wanting to see how this next, they have an off week this week, this next 3 week segment plays out.
No, I think it's his job to wait on that. That being said, Boston has been one of the better teams in the league, even if their record doesn't really reflect that, especially as of late. And I would not count on them taking 3 points or 4 points or 6 points from the Bruins, especially with the way the Habs have been playing recently.
No, I don't think it's likely either, but I don't think that you can rule it out. And I don't think you I think you'd be negligent to make that trade before these next three games are going to be played. So what does Montreal have to trade? I mean, we already know they have 8 picks in this draft, all in the first 5 rounds, 3 second rounders. So they've got a nice little stable of picks. You know, it's possible Chicago misses the playoffs, and that could be a pick in the 40s somewhere, even if they make the playoffs in the late 40s. Washington pick's probably going to be in the 50s, that second rounder. And Montreal's picks are probably going to be in the top 10 and in the 30s somewhere for that second rounder. I think you can get more picks and prospects for Thomas Plekanec, who's a free agent. I know he's not having the best season, but there's so few centers available, and he's reliable against playing minutes against other teams' top lines and playing in his in the defensive end, that I see him maybe being not quite as good as Martin Hanzel brought back last year, but something decent with a second round pick and a prospect. I see, in terms of other free agents, no one's going to touch Hemsky. Hemsky hasn't played in Montreal in several months with his concussion, so no one's touching that. They've already moved Montoya out, getting a fourth or fifth rounder for him. That was decent value. Speaking of former Buffalo Sabres in the bottom six, Nicholas DeLaurier is going to be a free agent. He's something that might return back a fourth or fifth round pick. The way he's played in Montreal's bottom six, he's been, quite frankly, is having the best season of his career.
That's not saying much. That's a low, low bar.
He's having a very good season for a fourth liner. I think he's played very well on their penalty kill. He's got, I think, 6 goals. He basically only played with the team since November. And
Jordy Benn.
Jordy Benn's not a free agent, but I think if there's the right offer there, Montreal would trade him. Another player with a year left on his deal who I think would bring up a fantastic return and who might be worth trading, given what his contract is, what he's going to ask for a year from now, that he scored a lot of goals for Montreal off the wing. I know everyone thinks I'm talking about Max Pacioretty, but I'm not.
No, I'm guessing Paul Byron.
Yes, I think that Paul Byron could fetch a very nice return this trade deadline, given his contract and given the production that he's put up.
I completely agree. And he is one of the players that I thought about. And as a GM, you're so hesitant to move him because he is locked down. I mean, 1.16 AAV. For a player of his caliber is a steal. You know, as far as value contracts go, that's one of the best out there.
with that value,
he is 28 though.
With that value, I want a first rounder back.
I think that's a very fair ask.
You know,
yeah.
You're getting two playoff runs out of a guy who will kill penalties for you, who will put up close to 20 goals, who it might be one of the fastest players in the NHL. Not might be, is one of the fastest players in the NHL. And I know Calgary didn't like him because of his size, but he's very gritty for that size.
You're getting a middle six player who kills penalties, plays special teams, and is less than $2 million.
Yeah.
I think a first is incredibly fair value for that. You know, that's the kind of player that contending teams can afford and that makes the difference between winning the Stanley Cup and going out in the second round. That's that player.
Yeah. And I think at Max Pacioretty's contract that you're getting a top line winger at $4.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
I would look for maybe not quite as much, but I would look for close to what Colorado got for Matt Duchene.
I would look for exactly that.
I mean,
maybe not a prospect of the same caliber as Sam Girard, but I would look for a similar package.
Yeah, that's the kind, and I would be looking for a center prospect. I mean, I would be looking at the Anaheim Ducks and be saying Sam Steele. I would be looking at other teams that have been rumored have been St. Louis, and I would be saying Robert Thomas. And or if you want to go on defense, a Vince Dunn.
That's fair. Do you rate Vince Dunn that highly? Out of curiosity.
I do. I rate Vince Dunn very highly. I think it might be something where you're looking at a Vince Dunn and a Thomas.
That's fair. I can see that for Pacioretty.
Because I mean Thomas is not a surefire number one center by any means, and I think Sam Steele's you're looking at something like Sam Steele and Josh Mahura. I think you're looking at two legit prospects for this guy.
I think that's a very fair ask for the caliber of player he is. Like, Max Pacioretty is proven. You know what you're getting with Max Pacioretty.
Yeah, and I know he only has 10 goals this year, but you know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who can score 30 on a regular basis and can drive play from the wing, and you're getting it for $4.5 million.
Yep, that's exactly it. I mean, the counter to a Max Pacioretty is what can you get for a Mike Hoffman, who's on a similar deal, producing similar points. I think Pacioretty is just better. He's a little better value, and he's a better possession driver.
You're getting an extra year in Hoffman.
You are getting the extra year in Hoffman. Locked in at almost 5.2. So.
Yeah, you're getting the extra year in Hoffman, and that's the advantage.
Slightly younger.
That you'll get with, but I think if you're going to reset this Habs team without a full-scale rebuild, that it's the time to move Pacioretty and Byron. I would be scared about re-signing Paul Byron at age 30.
I would be too.
I would be scared about re-signing Pacioretty at age 30 for the amount of money that he's going to command.
And I think it's in the best interest for Montreal and Max Pacioretty to move on. They have had a very good run, but at a certain point, with everything that happened with PK Subban and just the way things are being reported out of Montreal right now, I think it's in their best interest to split and go different ways.
Yeah, but I think that Montreal has to be careful not to sell low on either of those two guys as well.
That's a very fair, very, very fair critique.
I mean, they are guys that you can do you know what? Max Pacioretty is probably still worth a prospect and a pick at next year's trade deadline.
Yeah.
And that's your fallback is I've got the draft. I've got early next season. I've got next year's deadline. You guys are going to have to pony up or we'll keep him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's a real chance to rebuild a prospect pool, and people have gotten on the Habs for their prospect pool. And a year ago, I mean, I was fully with them a year ago outside of Sergachev, and after Sergachev left, I was with them on where the Habs prospect pool was. I think the Habs prospect pool this season has taken a real step forward.
I think Victor Mete helps a lot.
Victor Mete coming out of nowhere. And he was very good last year, but I did not expect him to make the team out of training camp or anything like that. He's a legit top four capable looking defenseman right now. Ryan Poling, if the draft was held again today, what was held in June, would not last to 25th overall. Jake Evans has proven that it wasn't all Anders Bork with him in Notre Dame. He is leading that team by 10 or 12 points in scoring and playing a two-way game for them, and is a legit prospect, I think, at this point.
It's certainly better than what it was.
Yeah. Nikita Sherbak is over a point per game in the AHL and is dominating down there. And then you've got Josh Brook, who's come out of nowhere and is having... He started the season with an injured shoulder. He's now played about 20 games for Moose Jaw. He's played about 16 games for Moose Jaw. I know plus minus isn't the greatest stat, but we don't have possession stats for the WHL. Something like plus 28 in 16 games, over a point per game. And for those who've watched him, and I've watched him, he's playing basically flawless defense and looks dynamic offensively. If he did this from the start of the season and wasn't injured to start the year, the way he's played his 16 games or so would have got him an invite to that Canadian junior camp.
He's been phenomenal. Just living out here and hearing about him and then seeing what he's done, he looks the part for sure.
So, I mean, Josh Brook looks, if we had the draft today, he's a first rounder. And so you've got a number of players, and that's not even getting into Will Bitten, who has 27 points in his last 17 games. There's a number of players in that prospect group who've taken a step forward this season. And so things don't look quite as bleak for the Habs. If you add a bunch of second rounders and maybe you get a second first rounder in this draft, you add some legit prospects like we were talking about for Pacioretty, you could very quickly have this team rebuilt and ready to go, still within Carey Price's window.
Yeah. And I mean, Carey Price's window is a little longer than most, you would assume, too.
Yes.
Assuming he stays healthy.
So, I mean, if you start putting those type of deals together, like I talked about, I think Byron's an expendable piece, knowing what the Habs have on the wings, knowing with Nikita Sherbak in the minors, knowing how you've had to put Charles Houdon on the fourth line at times, and I don't think he's a fourth line player.
No.
And knowing that I really like Arturi Lehkonen, and he's had a rough season, hasn't been able to finish at the rate he was last year. Is one of the reasons, again, like we talked about with Drouin and his stats. One of the reasons Drouin doesn't have the numbers is Arturi Lehkonen's been set up for over 20 high-danger scoring chances from Drouin's would have gotten a primary assist on and has two goals on those.
Those are not ideal numbers, to say the least.
No, and if you're
but saying... But I still have faith in him, though.
Yeah, and I still have faith in him. I think he's been a bit unlucky. So I think that if you make the right moves, if you're Bergevin, this team can be reset very quickly. And that was the word he kept using, not a rebuild, a reset. So I think he's on that page. It's just a matter of, can he do it? Because he's had 6 years to find a center, and Jonathan Drouin's the best he's done.
And even in the press conference, he said, I don't know that I love Drouin's center.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's one weird thing about that press conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm I read into that as a motivation tool. You know, he's pushing the player to get better. I can't see any other reason why he would say that.
The other issue I have with that is there's a guy on your team who actually produced when he played center. And you've insisted he's a winger and you won't put him back at center.
Yep.
Like, that's the one that boggles my mind, is that I don't mind forcing Drouin to play center and seeing if he can do it, and let's leave him there. This season, like we said, is probably not going to get better. You might, you know, unless you beat the Bruins, and that's unlikely. Leave him there for 82 games. Let's see how he looks at the end of the season. But by the same token, it's time to put Galchenyuk back at center.
I think it's time for Galchenyuk to move on, just so that he can have an opportunity to actually develop as a player, because he should be playing center. He is a very strong center, and there's no reason for him not to be there.
No, there really isn't. The same complaints that they had about him about winning faceoffs, which is bullshit, okay, flat out, if you're looking at faceoff percentage and you're concerned about a guy who's at 40%, bullshit.
Go draft Antoine Vermette.
Yeah.
It's not going to be as strong, but he'll win you faceoffs.
Who's the best team in the NHL right now?
Tampa Bay. And their faceoffs are not very good.
No. They are 30th in the NHL in faceoff percentage.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's not very good.
It's the worst. Or the second worst.
It's the second worst in the league. And it makes no lick of difference on their team.
Well, that's just it. If you have good players, they will win the puck back. I mean, if you follow anybody like Micah McCurdy or the shift chart or Prashanth Iyer or just anybody who does anything to do with shift work, they will tell you the majority of the time you are stepping onto the ice is not during a faceoff. It is on the fly. And if you are spending the majority of your time playing and starting shifts on the fly, and then even just playing, the majority of your time is not spent doing faceoffs, it is way more important to have someone who can win the puck back during open play than someone who can win during a glorified set play.
Yeah, a glorified set play where other teams have been coached and coached and coached like crazy to defend it even when they lose. And there are always a few, and people will always be like, show you a clip of some goal off a face-off, and right?
Mm-hmm.
But those are so rare in terms of the number of goals we get in the NHL.
And the worst part is, when you win a face-off, to execute perfectly after a face-off win, you have to win it cleanly, which doesn't even happen that often.
No.
I face-offs are so overrated.
Yeah, so that's number one. Number two, and I get this, he's not that good. Galchenyuk's not that good defensively, and I get that.
And that's.
But we're giving Drouin the free pass because we don't have any other centers.
Mm-hmm.
That was the exact logic, pretty much, of Bergevin's quote was, we don't have any other centers, so he's going to stay there, but in an ideal world, we'd have him on the wing. Why does that logic not apply to Alex Galchenyuk? Why has it not applied to him for the last 3 years?
He's Russian.
Well, he's American, but...
Mm.
With a
Russian. I don't know.
I don't get it. It doesn't make... And I know that... That's the other thing that I've heard is the Russian thing, but...
I don't really buy into it.
I don't buy the French thing because the Canadians...
No.
Have not drafted a single French player in the last two drafts.
No, I think it's overhyped. Honestly, I think they like Drouin, and I think Galchenyuk just has a bad rap.
Yeah.
I don't think the organization likes him.
Yeah. The only thing that I will say to those who say that Drouin's only a hab because he's French is, number one, Carl Alsner is not French, and that is not the reason that he's been overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
Shea Weber is not French, and that's not the reason why that bad deal was made.
Drouin is a Hab because Drouin played well. Yes. And he was a scoring winger slash center who was available.
100%. It does not have to do with the French thing.
No. No. He was a purchasable commodity and one that doesn't come up very often.
And the only other trades for French players that Bergevin has made, there's two others. One is to trade Zach Redmond for Nicolas Deslauriers.
Impactful.
Not a huge impact, but it is a clear win for the Habs on that deal. You've got an actual fourth liner who's killing penalties and has scored six goals for you for a guy who's stuck in the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
And are making making the same money, and their contracts expire at the same time. That's a good move. The second one is trading Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischmann for Philip Deneau in a second.
I miss Dale Weiss, so yeah. I can't defend this one.
I think that's another fantastic trade for Bergevin, and that's another win in his book.
No, it was. Getting rid of both of those contracts was imperative.
They were free agents in a year when Carey Price was hurt, and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I think that's all the time we have this week.
I think so. I think we've sufficiently covered the Habs, and
well, we've got to fill in because, you know, congratulations go out to the LaPalme family on a baby boy. So our last word on Habs podcast hasn't been going out with Connor and Johannes. But I think we filled the void for them this week.
I think we did. I think we nailed it. I think they'll be jealous of our expertise, but I think we've definitely filled that gap.
All right.
Anything going on at Last Word on Hockey you want to plug before we sign off?
I am going to do my World Junior reviews on the draft eligibles. I'm going to get into Svechnikov and what he did in the tournament, as long with Zadina, Dahlin, Brady Tkachuk. Maybe a look at some of the players on the Swiss team as well. There was a couple there. And then do one on drafted prospects on the good, the bad, and the ugly in this tournament.
I like it. I just want to plug all of our new writers. We have hired a ton of new writers for teams that perhaps we weren't covering as in-depth as we should have been. We've got some new Preds writers, new Leafs writers, new Avalanche writers, new Oilers writers, all of whom have put in fantastic samples and put out fantastic work so far. And so I just wanted to plug the content that's been going out recently, because I've really been enjoying it.
Yeah, I think we've got some great new content out.
So there you go. LastWordOnHockey.com. Check it out. Love it. Enjoy it. Share it with your friends. Write for us if you want to. Ben and I will read your work, and we'll let you in on the fun.
For sure. All right. Have a good night, Colton.
You too.